So you have the Mishnah here on Daf Yudalad Amid Beis?
Yes.
Okay. Omer Rav Yossi, we started this last. Maisa b'tinoko shiyor d'lamalos mayim in a'ayin v'nenso. So we don't know who the Boel is and whether he passes sata kuhuna. Omer Rav Yochanan ben Nuri im rov anshei ha'ir. So one of the members of the city came out to do this Maisa.
Rabbi, excuse me for a second.
So if Rov Maisa Ha'ir, Rov Anshi Ha'ir Masin L'Kuhuna, in other words, the members of the population are Yisraelim, are the Ksherim, and therefore we can assume that when they have beer with this girl, they don't pasul ha l'kuhuna. Is harezo tinasi l'kuhuna. Then, in this case, we can rely on Rov. Now, just by introduction to the Gemara, this doesn't make sense according to anybody. Meaning, we have, in the previous Mishnah, a case of a pregnant unwed woman, and we don't know who the Boel is. So we have Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Gamliel on one side and Rabbi Yeshua on the other. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Gamliel say that even if Rov Psulim, we can still be Machshir, huh? And Rabbi Yeshua says that even if they're Rov Ksherim, she's Psul Kahuna. No one says that Rov is good enough. So this Mishnah of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri seems to reflect no shita that we know of. It's a brand new shita. So the Gemara right away asks the following.
It's a strange expression, Rav Ansher E Masin L'Kuhuna.
Masin L'Kuhuna means that if they have a relationship with someone, that someone could marry a Kohen. In other words, they don't passel anyone with their beer. So that means, let's say this person would marry a Jewish girl and then die. So now she's an almana, she can marry a Kohen.
Yeah. We didn't use that expression in the previous machlokes. They're kesher.
What was the language there?
You just say kesherim or something?
I don't know. All right, let's just see if we can make some progress. Amalei Rav L'Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan Nuri Di Omer Kaman. He doesn't seem to fit into any shita. E Rav Gamliel, the previous mission is Afil Barop Psulim Nami Machshir. That was the sugi that we had. That Man De Machshir Machshir Afil Barop Psulim. So we don't even need a rov. V'ik Rav Yeshua Afil Barop Ksherim Nami Pasul. The rov is not reliable. Amalei, so Rav Nachman answers, Hachi Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. This Mishnah of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri reflects the sheet of Rav Yeshua. So Rov Ksherim, one Rov would not be enough, but here we have two Rovs. This is a double Rov. Okay, so here we're turning to Daf Tesvav Amar Rav. Bikronos Tzipori Hayamaisa. In the wagons of Tzipori, when there was a marketplace outside the city of Tzipori, and the wagons used to come and bring the merchandise, and this Maisa, this Tinokas, had this incident in the Kronos. Kid Rabbi Ami, Ti Omer Rabbi Ami, Vahusha Haisa Seya Shel Bnei Adam Ksherim Overes L'Sham. So there was a whole caravan of people who had passed by. They came from other cities to do business in the marketplace, and they were Ksherim.
How do we know it's a
tinoka? How old is the tinoka?
How do we know it's a tinoka? I didn't see the word.
No, it didn't say tinokin in the Mishnah? I thought it did say.
Yeah, that's the issue of it.
Okay.
Maisa v'tinokas, yeah. Okay? So now we have what's called Trey Ruby. We have two robes. The city is made up predominantly of Ksherim, and the Seah is made up predominantly of Ksherim. So we don't know where the Baal came from. Did he come from the city, or did he come from the Kronos, the Seah? Either way, we have a rove. So we have two roves. Now, keep in mind, as we said last time, the two roves don't change in any way the statistical probability.
You can say the two miyotzin.
The two
miyotzin.
Right, but we're not choshish for the miyotzin because we rely on rove, but we have one rove and another rove. Now, how does that change anything? That we'll have to see.
What was the story that Rabbi Yeshua that with the Mal Asaba Bekahuna? Was that his
right? Correct. Correct. And that's going to be the Mal Asaba Yuchsin here to require a second rove. But we don't know that yet, but that's going to be the ultimate. Kidder Avianai, Diomar Avianai, Niv Elis Bekronos Ksher Lekahuna. If the bia took place in the wagon, literally, then she's ksheri lakuna. So Gemara says, "Bekronos hakadaita." Do you really mean in the kronos? I mean the halacha doesn't change whether the bia took place inside the wagon or outside the wagon. Ella hanif ella niv elas bishas kronos ksheri lakuna. Don't take it literally that big kronos means inside the car, but means at that time period when the kronos, when these caravans are coming from other cities. Aval perish echad mitzipori ubal. If we know for sure that the ball came from the city, and therefore the rov seya is irrelevant, havlad shtuki. Shtuki, we said, was possible because we can't identify the father, so we don't know who the boil was. Ki hadchi asar avdimi omar ziiri omar abchanina, vi amrile omar ziiri omar abchanina. Holchin acharov ha'ir, v'ein holchin acharov seya. This statement has to be refurbished. But let's just explain it on a simple level. That we rely on the rove of the city, but not on the rove of the seya. Now, amongst these two roves, let's keep in mind, as the Gemara is going to point out, now the rove seya is more reliable, is more effective than the rove ha'ir. Why? Because in the rov ha'ir situation, it's going to depend upon who came to whom. Mm-hmm. So, I, you know what? I'm not sure if at this point I should go through this whole thing, or let's wait another few lines of the Gemara, and we're going to have to go through the whole thing. So let's see how the Gemara rejects this. The Gemara says, klape lai. Klape yala means pugfaka, just the opposite. If you want to choose a rov that's reliable, the rove that's reliable is the rove seya. Why is that? Because hachi naidi. What does naidi mean?
Traveling,
moving, right? Moving. The main thing is that it's on the move. And the naidi is referring to which of the two roves? That's the rove seya, because the seya is passing by. So the seya is in movement, in motion. But Hani, Kvi, Vakaima, the members of the city are stationary in their place. So again, which rove is more reliable? When you have the rove Seah, which is Naidi, or the rove Ha'ir, which is Kvi, Vakaima? It's the rove Seah, which is Naidi.
Why? Because we're going to take the approach of
Well, it depends which way you're going. So in the case of Naidi, if you're talking about the rove Seah, that's called Kol the Parish Meruba Parish. So, for example, when you have 9 kosher butcher shops, you assume that one of the pieces of meat came out, that's called naidi, and it came from the rove. If, on the other hand, I go into a butcher shop, and the butcher shops are stationary, that's called kvi v'kaimi, and I don't know if I went into a kosher one or non-kosher one, that's called kavua kemetzal mechzitami. So what the Gemara is doing, the Gemara is classifying these two roves. There's the rove Seah, which is called Naidi, and there's a rove Ha'ir, which is Kvi of Akaimi. The rove Seah is reliable, the rove Ha'ir is not reliable. The rove Seah is reliable because it's Naidi. Naidi means called the Parish Meruba Parish. Right? Something came out of a group, and that thing that came out came from the rove. In the case of rove Ha'ir, somebody went into the city, all the people in the city, the potential candidate ball, if each one is via the kaimi, and in that case we don't have a rove at all, because that's called kol kavua kemetzal mechzitami. So therefore, the Gemara's language here, as it's initially formulated in the name of Rav Chanina, that holchem achar rov ha'ir v'lo achar rov seah, that's just the opposite. If you have to choose a rov that's reliable, it's going to be the rov seah, because the rov seah is naidi, and therefore I can apply the principle of kol deparish meruba parish. The rov ha'ir is a very flimsy kind of rove, because if we assume that we look out at the city and we decide what is the majority, is it made up of rove ksherim or rove psulim, that whole question is irrelevant, because when we're looking at the city, like looking at the butcher shops that will happen in just a minute, then it's 50-50. Why? Because since you're talking about kviya v'kaimi, therefore the principle of kol kavua kevetzal mechza applies.
So the question comes down to where she was nemsa?
Yeah. Well, let's see. We just said that she was nemsa in the Kronos, remember? Not literally in the Karam, but Vishas Kronos, like meaning in the Shuk.
They're actually still being in town.
Right. No, the Kronos are outside the city in the Shuk, right? That's where the Kronos are on the move. They're coming into the Shuk, which is located outside the city.
Okay.
So if the Boel came from one of the members of the Kronos, which is called the Seah, then he was Porish. He came from the Seah, which was on the move, and he was Boel. If, on the other hand, the Bia took place in the city, then that would be a case of Kol Kavua Kemetzal Mechza Domi.
But we know what happened in the Kronos.
Again, that's where the Gemara is going to go through all the logical possibilities. But to say that we should apply the Rove of the city and not the Rove of the Seah makes no sense, because you're choosing between two Roves. The Rove of the city may or may not be Kavua. The Rove of the Seah, by definition, is called the Parish Meruba Parish. So if you want to identify one of these two Roves and say, well, we must have this robe, this is the primary robe, and this is the indispensable robe, you're going to identify the robe for the sale because that's nightly. You're not going to identify the robe for the city because that's an iffy kind of robe. Maybe it's a robe if we know that somebody was parish from the city. Maybe it's not such a robe. What the Gemara is going to suggest now is that the reason why we need two robes is because we're always afraid that if we rely on one rove, in the eyes of the public, they may confuse that rove with a case of kol kavua kemetzal mechza domi. So the flimsy rove, the problematic rove, if we're going to rely on the rove ha'ir, that's problematic, because next time, chas v'shalom, if something like this occurs, people are going to apply this principle of rove ha'ir even if the be'ilah took place in the city, which is kol kavua kemetzal mechza domi. So once again, the main thrust of what the Gemara is arguing here is that if you want to identify one rove as the reliable rove, then choose the rove seah, because that always, by definition, is going to be a reliable rove. Don't go into the whole question, the questionable rove of rove ha'ir. Ella, so now we have to reformulate Rabbi Chanina. By the way, I've been noticing in Ksuvos over and over again, the last couple of blot, I've never seen this so, you know, happen so often, that the Gemara quotes somebody and it makes no sense, and the Gemara reformulates it. It's like there's always like a Girsa problem. I don't know. And I noticed it consistently in the last couple of blot. I don't know why. It's like very fluky. You know, sometimes you have a statement which has to be refurbished, but so often, so frequently, over and over.
There's a cop in this part of the Gemara hundreds of years ago, and they would have made all the toss. He did these two bad.
Right. Ella, says the Gemara, what did Rav Chanina have in mind? Holchin achar rov ha'ir. We can rely on rov ha'ir, even though, again, rov ha'ir is problematic. It's good in this case because the bia took place in the Kronos, so we know that one person from the city was Poresh. But it's not good if the bi'ilah would have taken place in the city, then the rov is ineffective. V'hu de'ikar rov se'a mahado. That because this rov is unreliable, again, depending upon the mitzius. But since the Rabbanan are afraid that from case A people will mistakenly confuse it with case B, because they're not sensitive to the distinction between where did the Be'ila take place, they just think, let's make a statistical calculation of the members of the city and see how many are ksherim. That's what people are thinking. What they're missing the point on is another variable, namely where did the Be'ila take place. So that's why we have to strengthen the Rov. We can't leave the Rov on its own. How do we strengthen the Rov and therefore guarantee that people won't make this mistake? By setting up another requirement. There's got to be a Rov Seah. Now once you introduce the Rov Seah, then where did the Be'ila take place? Outside the city. Ah, if it took place outside the city, and now you have the two roves, then you can certainly guarantee that we're talking about Kol DeParish Meruvah Parish, that we're talking about Naivi. So we're never going to rely on the rove for ear, because if we do, the distinction is going to be blurred between whether the rove for ear, the Be'ilu, took place in the city or outside the city. But once we introduce the requirement that Rov Ha'ir is only reliable if it's adjoined to a Rov Seah, then we know that they'll always apply the Rov when it's viable, namely outside the city with his 90. V'ein holchem achar Rov Ha'ir greidasa, v'lo achar Rov Seah greidasa. Now again, we're not going to rely on the Rov Ha'ir alone, and that I understand, because the Rov Ha'ir could be problematic, could be confused with a case of Kol Kavu Kemetz Al Mechza. But why not rely on the Rov Seah? That's not clear. Rov Seah is always, by definition, going to be called the Parish Meruba Parish. So, if let's say, for example, the Be'ilah took place outside the city, but there was no market, there was no caravan, there was no Seah, then she can't marry a Kohen. Why? Because you only have one rov, namely the Rov Ha'ir. Correct? But what's confusing to me is, let's say that this Be'ila took place very far away from the city. B'merchak gadol. So then the ear is completely neutralized. It's not relevant. All you have is the Rov Seah. So we're talking about a marketplace that's located very far away from the city limits. Correct? You have Rov Seah, but you don't have Rov Ha'ir. That's also not reliable. And the question is, why not? Because since we've neutralized the city, and we've isolated the Rov Seah, why does the Gemara insist, V'ein v'lo achar Rov Seah greidasa, that if you isolate one single Rov, in this case the Rov Seah, that's not reliable. That's not in any way clear to me, because Rov Seah is by definition a reliable Rov. It's 90, it's outside the city, it's called the Parish Meruba Parish. So the Gemara answers, the Gemara says, my taima, why can't we rely on Rov Seah? In other words, again, we really understand very well, we can appreciate why we don't rely on Rov Ear, because Rov Ear, as we said, could be questionable, problematic, but why not rely on Rov Seah? And the Gemara says, Gzera Rov Seah, to Rov Ha'ir, if we're going to allow relying upon a Rov in the case where the Be'ila took place at a distance from the city, and we're going to activate the principle of Rov Seah, then next time people might confuse that with Rov Ha'ir. The onlooker is not sensitive to the distinction between Rov Seah and Rov Ha'ir. He's not Yorid La'omko Sheldavar to say, well, wait a minute, did the Be'ila take place outside the city or inside the city? All that is confusing. All they remember is that called the Parish Meruba Parish, that we can rely on Rov. And in that case, they're going to confuse it with the case where she had the Be'ila in the city.
Who are we worried about? All the people getting mixed up? I mean, who's going to know how to marry a Kohen? It's going to be the Bezdin.
Bezdin anyway, yeah. Okay, it's true, but I'm not sure exactly if we're worried about Bezdin. You know, maybe Bezdin at some point may not make this distinction. I don't know.
So we're down to, no matter what, you need a double rove?
We need a double rove, and now the Gemara, if you give the Gemara another minute or two, the Gemara is going to clarify why we need both roves. Okay, so we're in the thrust of it now. We're in, you know, the stream is moving, we're in the middle. Okay, so we've made a lot of progress. We understand why Rov Ha'ir itself is not reliable, because we might confuse it with the case where the Bila happened in the city. We now are adding another piece to the puzzle. Rov Seir is not reliable because somebody might confuse it with Rov Ha'ir. So the Gemara says, "V'rov ha'ir nami." Why don't we rely on Rov Ha'ir? Either ka'azla inu legaba, if he came on to her, meaning he left the city, one of the members of the city, and was boil her, is called a parish meruva parish. So that we can rely on Rov.
Isn't why he's coming from a kavua?
Because he left a kavua. Once he leaves a kavua, he's mafkia the din of kavua, because he's neither and he's not kviya v'kaimi. So again, if she comes to him, that's kviya v'kaimi, and then it's called kavua kimetz al metza. But he came out, so if he came out, why not rely on rov ha'ir? Lo tzricha deka azla ihi legavayu, but rather she went to him. No, if she went to him, then it's no longer rov because he's stationary, and kol kavua kimetz al metza dami. The Gemara says the Havile Kavua, the members of the city are set, stationary in their places, in their homes. And now the Gemara quotes, Amar Abzera Kol Kavua Kemetz Al Mechza Dami. So now we understand why the Chacham instituted Gzera, that we should never rely on Rov Ha'ir, even if the Boel came to the Isha, because that could be confused with the case where she came to him and she entered into the city and went into his house, which is Kviya V'kaimi, and therefore this Kol Kavua Kemetz Al Mechzad Zami. So don't rely on Rov Ha'ir. On the other hand, don't rely on Rov Seah when the Biyah clearly took place outside the city, even though that's definitely a reliable Rov of Kol De Parsh Meruva Parsh, because we're afraid that people will not make the distinction between Rov, between Seah and Ear. If they're going to confuse Seah with Ear, they'll go back to the situation of Ear. And in the case of Ear, there's a possibility of what? Of Kol Kavua Kemetz Al Mechza Dami. So Rabosai, how many mistakes are we anticipating here? Again, let's assume that the Be'ilah took place in the Kronos. That's the case we're dealing with. And therefore, if there's Rov Seah, we can rely on Rov Seah. That's clearly, certainly, a reliable Rov called the Parsh Meruva Parsh. How many mistakes would have to be made in order for someone to be Matir Har to a Kohen when she's really Asura, she's Psula to a Kohen? Two mistakes. Why? Mistake number one is we're going to confuse Seah with Ear. Okay, we're going to say to the same extent that we relied on Rov Seah, we can rely on Rov Ha'ir. Well, that itself is not bad, because Rov Ha'ir, if the Bia took place outside the city, is reliable. No, we're going to make another mistake. Once you're going to tell me Rov Ha'ir, we're going to mistakenly assume Rov Ha'ir applies even when she comes to him. So all of the Mefarshim here ask the question, isn't this what's called a Gzera L'Gzera? Like we had this in Basa B'Cholov, if you remember, we had a case where we were afraid that if we allow you to put meat and milk on the same table, then you might come to eat them together. And if we allow you to eat them together, you might come to cook them together. So the Gemara asks, isn't that Gzera L'Gzera? So the Gemara says, well, we're afraid that if we allow you to put them both on the same table, you put them both in a pot. On the same table. You know, they used to have what's called an ilfas. You know, they. So it's all one gzeir, right? Kulchad gzeirin. So here also, I'll just read to you the Ritva. The Ritva says, V'ein bazemishum gzeir l'gzeira, el akol gzeir achas. It's all one gzeir. She'im nelech achar rov seya l'chud. If we're going to rely on the rov of seya, l'basof yisbatel gam hagzeira, shelo yelech achar rov ha'ir. In other words, the original gzera that we shouldn't rely on Rov Ha'ir because maybe we'll confuse it with the case where she came to him, that gzera is not going to be able to be held up if we allow relying on Rov Seah. Because once we paskin Lekula and we're makshir ha based on Rov Ha'ir, they're going to be makshir ha indicate, I'm sorry, say it again. Once we rely on Rov Seah, we'll be Maksha HaLakuna based on the Rov Seah. They'll confuse it with Rov Ha'ir, and they'll assume you can be Matar on Rov Ha'ir. So the whole Xer of Rov Ha'ir is now going to be null and void. No one's going to take that seriously. Because in their mind, you already were Matar with Rov Ha'ir. Why were you Matar with Rov Ha'ir? Because you were Matar with Rov Seah. So the Ritva says, Kulachad Xeri. Alright. So the Gemara says, Umi Be'inan Tre Rubi Vasanya, I have a Brisa that says we don't need two roves. The Brisa is going to rely on one rove. So imagine we have 9 stores that are selling kosher meat. We have 1 store that's selling 9 kosher meat. We find a piece of meat in the street. We assume called the Parish Maruba Parish came from the 9, one of the 9 kosher butcher shops. We're not going to require another rove. We're not going to say that there are people coming from outside the city who are carrying meat, and most of the meat that's being transported through the city is kosher meat. Umi be'inan tre rubi. You see, Daniel, the Gemara doesn't know what you said before.
Very nice.
Right? In other words, Daniel understands that everything here in the back pocket is what's called Milo Asa B'yuchsa. That for Kohanim we have to upgrade the standards and the demands. But we don't know that yet. So we have to be very naive here as we go through the city.
This is non-tens of the butchery shops.
Our kosher meat.
Kosher, because right. 6 out of 10 are going to be good enough.
6 out of 10 also work.
Right. Right. 6 out of 10 should be the same. The question is, what about the volume of meat in each store? That's a different issue. Do we count stores? Do we count volume of meat? Vatanya Tesha Chanuyos, this is one of the most famous prices in all Shas. Tesha Chanuyos, Kulon Mokros, Besar Shkuta. All the 9 sell kosher meat that's been shechted. The Achas Mocheres Basar Nevela. And there's only one store. Brian, can I ask you a big valedictory for me? I can do it myself, but just flip the door closed. I get very distracted by the noise. Thank you so much. So Rav Osai, he went into a store. I always give this example. You've heard it from me dozens of times. Was he buying meat for his dog? Or was he buying meat for himself? Because the veil is a lot cheaper than kosher meat. Especially if you marked it on Badat or Reuben or I don't know what your favorite Ashkaf is.
You said the problem is that when you're buying for your servants, for your maid, you have to buy them kosher meat.
Oh, because what? Because you might get confused and somebody might eat it? Is that what you mean?
No, they're their own creatures. I mean.
So why do you have to buy kosher meat for your maid? I mean, is she black, yellow? What color is she?
No,
is she colored or she's white and Jewish? What? So why do you have to buy kosher meat for you have very frugal maids, I see.
I feel it'd be hard to go and buy.
Ah, maybe they're Muslims.
No.
So they only eat halal meat. No, what? I mean, tell me the truth.
Yeah, members of the Church of Zion.
Look, you can't ask me a cash from South Africa because I don't know what goes on in South Africa.
I'm just saying.
Can you walk in the store and buy Nivellas for
a dog? Why not?
Even for a person, but like
who? A guy?
When I was going fishing, I was.
Oh, you worried about Marisayan or something? What?
No,
I don't think
it feels wrong.
I don't know that there's Marisayan. Again, if it's a restaurant and you're going to eat,
you're going to the Pick and Pay or the big supermarket in Johannesburg, right?
Yeah.
They've got a big kosher counter, they've got a big trade counter.
So I don't think there's Myra
Sinai. It says kosher butcher and non-kosher butcher.
Yeah. I remember I went to Checkers and there was a whole section of mamish like a restaurant, take out food that was cooked and prepared. And the rest of the place is not Jewish, but in Canada they also have such a thing. They have these big gigantic supermarkets with a whole kosher section. But Howard's and Johnson's, that's a problem. People going for a coffee, mamish in a trade, when they're on the road, in a trade for restaurant. So, it became so popular that people stop by for a coffee on their way that they say it's no longer Marisayan. I mean, that's, you have to know what the law is. I'm not here to paskin on that. But be that as it may, what happened here is that he went into a store and he doesn't remember. I mean, all of us forget. So he forgot that he bought for his dog, which means he went to the cheapest butcher shop in town who's selling nevela. Or did he buy for his family? And he just simply doesn't remember. So this is a very strict law here. The Ein Yodea Me'ezem En Lokach is Sfeiko Asur. Imagine that 9 out of 10 butcher shops are selling kosher meat, and the meat that he comes home with, puts on the table, he looks inside, he doesn't know, where did I buy it, where did I buy from? He's got to assume it's treifa meat. And that's called kol kavua kemetzal mes.
What's the smara?
I don't know. I think you should ask that question to Neil after the Gemara finds a source for this din, okay? Because maybe the source itself will somehow reveal some deeper meaning into the principle that underlies the principle called kavur kemetzal metzadami. Ubinimtza. Now it doesn't. He didn't forget which store he went into. He didn't even get into the store. He found a piece of meat on the street. And there was no semen on it, so he's not having a Shabbos Aveda. So he comes and he wants to feed it to his family at dinner. Can he do so? Mm-hmm. Where's the Vadat Hetcher on it?
On the 9 stars.
He's allowed. Why? Halach Acharov. He can feed it to his family for dinner. And don't get frum on me. It says Halach Acharov.
This L'chadchila, both of
them? L'chadchila, Mamish, there's no gzera that says, well, let's get another rov into the picture. If you have a reliable rov, you rely on rov. So you're telling me that rov say is reliable. Or in the case where she had biyatza in the city, even rov ear is reliable. No, you're saying no. We're going to make gzeras here today, there'll be matir kavua, and therefore we need a second rov. The second rov is going to guarantee that everybody knows it's called a parsh, beruva parsh. Here, we're relying on one single rove of called a parsh, beruva parsh. V'chitem, if you're going to tell me, you know what? There's a second rove. Why is there a second rove? Because forget about the 9, you know, the tremendous volume of kosher meat in the city. There's a tremendous volume of kosher meat outside the city. Why is that? B'she'ein daltos medina, the word medina means a city, ne'ulos. There's another rove over here. Now again, what city are we talking about? You know, we're not talking about Johannesburg. We're not talking about London. We're not talking about Flatbush in Brooklyn. We're not talking about any of the above.
We're talking about a place in Israel.
So if it's a place in Israel, I mean, admittedly, we have some goyim in Israel of different sorts. You know, I won't go into detail, but people are eating non-kosher meat. But they represent a minority. So let's say I'm in the city of Telz. Telstone, right? I'm in Telstone. So I've got rove of the people in Telstone. Okay, you got Abu Ghosh. I don't know, it gets a little tricky here. But okay, rove of the people in that city are eating kosher meat. So I got 9 butcher shops selling kosher meat. And not only that, the gates of Telstone are open. People are coming in from the outside. They're coming from Yerushalayim, the nearby city. And they also have a rove. So I have 2 roves. Amar Abzera Afal Pisha Dalsos Medina Ne'ulos. Even though I only have 1 rove, the gates of the city are locked. No one's coming in and out. So we have 1 rove. So the answer is Maila Asu B'Yuchsin. Now we let the cat out of the bag. Ein Achinami, 1 rove is sufficient. There's no reason to make a gzera that tomorrow we're going to confuse rove with kavua, and we're going to be matir, a case which is mechtzal mechtza, mistakenly thinking that the rove is applicable. And again, intuitively we would have suggested that the rove is reliable. I mean, who cares if it's kavua? The same statistical probability exists. So let's rely on Rove. We don't have to make those zeros, except in one area, and that's Yuchsin. And Yuchsin means kahuna. You remember maybe last week we discussed that even when the Amoraim wanted to be matir the Kohen, the Kohen didn't even want to listen to them. The standards for kahuna were that much greater. And therefore, all these gzeros, that if we rely on this rove, we'll come to that rove, and for that rove to this rove, and it's called the kavua, all those gzeros requiring trei rubi are instituted with regard to kahuna. That's called maila asu b'yuchs.
That's a couple of questions off the side, more to do with the example given about the bos hanimtza. Isn't that a lot about Bosa Hanelim and Ayin?
Right, you're right. You're going to have to figure out how to work out Bosa HaShinis Alim and Ayin.
The second cache is on...
But I think in the case of Bosa HaShinis Alim and Ayin, there's a...
So we're supposed to have it double sealed for that reason.
Isn't that the fourth cache?
Well, whether it's kashin or not, the question is whether the meat itself comes from a kosher animal. And Daniel is right. You know, you have to know for sure that you always had supervision on the meat. But I think the case of Bosach and Salamina Ayin is a case where circumstances indicate that there's a good possibility somebody may have switched the meat around. So, for example, if I have, like Brian's case before, I have a maidservant and I have meat on the table, you know, she may have switched her meat with my meat. That's called Bosach and Salamina Ayin. But when we find a piece of meat in the street, now, we're not assuming that somebody, you know, switched it or moved it around. We can rely on Rov. Gufa. Amar Abzera. Kol kavua kemechtzal mechtzadami. Bein lekula, bein lechum. The principle of kavua works not only lechumra. Like, for example, in the case of Teisha Chanuyos, Mokros Basa Kasha, their kavua takes Rov and completely neutralize, and you're left with a suffix, 50-50. But it even works lakul. And the Gemara is going to now embark on a project and work very hard to come up with a case where kol kavua works lakul. So first of all, where does Rav Zera know this from? Minole l'Rav Zera ha, ilei matesha chanuiz kula mokros, sar shkuto v'yachas sar nevela, v'lokach machas me'aveni yedei amezen v'lokach, Sveko Asur Ubinim Tzahal Chacharov Hasam Lechumra. There, the Kavua case, the Kavua principle, is working Lechumra. If not for Kavua, I would have said, let's rely on Rov, Teisha Chanuiz Mokros, Basa Kosher, Basa Shachut, and therefore be Mutta. So it comes, you know, the principle of Kavua comes into the picture to be Machmer, to prohibit me from eating this meat because it becomes a suffix and the rove is completely neutralized. So if Rav Zera has a source that establishes that kavua works lakula, it's certainly not this case. It's certainly not this. Now, Rabosai, here I had a shtickle question in my mind. I couldn't find anyone who asked this, but then I realized maybe it's not such a question. Why did Reb Zera have to search high and low for a proof that kol kavua works lakula? Let's say the city is made up the exact opposite, 9 trefa butcher shops and only 1 kosher butcher shop. And you go into the butcher shop, you don't know which one you went into. Once again, the halacha is kol kavua kemechtzal mechtzadami. There what you're doing is you're neutralizing the rove that says it was treif. So I slugged myself up and I said, but lemais, it's still going to be also, because at the end of the day, you're going to get a suffix. And then I started thinking to myself, would he get malchus in such a case? If not for the halach of kavua, since I have rove, rove establishes it with certainty, because the Torah says rely on rove, that this is a non-kosher piece of meat. If we give him hasra and we have edim, he be chayv malchus. But once you apply the principle of kavua, it becomes a 50-50 situation, which means he can't be chayv malchus. So why did Rav Zera have to look high and low for a source that kavua works lakula? Right here in the case of Chanuyos, it works lakula. But I think maybe what the Gemara is trying to find is a halacha which is mutal chatchila. We're not looking for a case of is he chayv malchus or he's not a chayv malchus. Give me a clear cut, undeniable case where we're going to be makir, we're going to be matir based on kavua. Ella says the Gemara in Hilchus Tuma Vitara, we're going to rely on kavua lakula. Now let me explain. With regard to suffik tuma, the principle is that in Rishus HaRabim, a suffik, if there's no rove, is tahar. So let's say you have a suffik, whether this person contaminated himself to tuma, contracted tuma, didn't, and you have a rove of the kavua type, right, which would tell you that he's tame. Since it's in Rishus HaRabim and it's a rove of kavua, which means we neutralize the rove and it becomes called kavua kemetzal mechzit. I mean, now we can be makil and tell the guy he's tar. despite the fact that 9 out of 10 probabilities tells me that he's tame. So what's the case? Now, the parsha in the Torah, just for the record, is Vayikra Yud Aleph, and there the Torah tells you which kinds of shrotzim are metame. Not every sheretz is metame. For example, believe it or not, frogs, right, which are called tzfardim, are not metame. There's a list of 10 shrotzim. What do you say?
Toads are.
Oh, toads are?
Yeah.
How come?
It is the parsha.
Oh, a toad is not a frog.
I don't know if it's really a toad, the frog.
Okay.
The sheretz one?
All right. I'll list you the shrotzim here. He has a list here. He says, Cholad, Akbar, Tzav, Anka, Koach, Lita. Oh, maybe a toad is a Lita. Maybe. Chumat and Tinsomis. Okay, so those are the... I'm sorry, did I say 10 shrotzim? There are 8. 8 shrotzim, Shmona shrotzim. And... in any case of a dead sheretz, then it's any contact would be metame a person. But if it's an additional ninth category of a sheretz, like a tzfardeh, which is not listed amongst the 8, then if you come in contact with a dead frog, you're not metame. So this is good news for frog lovers. Although frog lovers don't usually get contact dead frogs, but it happened that Nebuch the frog died, but you're still tar. So Tisha Tzfardim, now when these shrotzim are dead and the bodies start decomposing, you can't really tell which one of the shrotzim it is. But the case was the following. You know that 9 Tzfardim were in this, you know, container or whatever it was, and the 10th was a sheretz, hametame. And now they're all dead. Now, in this case, do we apply the principle of rov, or is it a case of kol kavua? It's called kavua. Because you put your hand into the box, and you came in contact with one of these 10 shrotzim. 9 out of 10 tells me that you are tar. So in that case, sfeik otame. So now we'll soon see that we're talking about a rishus. So the Gemara says, so that's not going to satisfy our needs. Ella Tisha Shrotzim Utzfardea Echad Beinehem, and now we're in Rishus Haravim, right? So what happens? He's got 9 out of 10 Tomek, right? Tisha Shrotzim, and only one tar. Now wait a minute. We have a rov statistically that tells me that he came in contact with the sheretz hametame, and a rishus harabim sveiko tar is only in a suffix, but not in the case of rov. If not for the din of kavua, we would have a simple, straightforward case of rov, which would mean that he's tame. How can you be mitayer in rishus harabim? So again, the din of rishus harabim, the unique category or rule that applies to rishus harabim is only the case where there's no rov tuma. If there's rov tuma, then the Torah says that rov is not a suffix. Rov establishes certainty. But here we have a case where it's a suffix. Now, why is it a suffix when you have a rov? And the answer is kavur. So we finally have a source. In a Mishnah, this Mishnah is in Masechta Olos, I think. Just one second. Just curious, does he tell you where the Mishnah is?
Masechta in Taras.
In Taras, okay, it's in Taras. And
in Nida.
And it's also Nida. So we have now explicit sources for Kavua Lakula. Fine. But that's only in the Tanaic literature. Where did the Tanoim know it from? So now we have to go back to the Bible itself, right? Umidoraisa minolan. You know, the Gemara at this point could have possibly said it's halach l'moshe v'sinai. It's part of the oral tradition. But the Gemara, you know, that's maybe a fallback position if we don't have any other option. But we'd rather find a pasuk which serves as a source for the din of kol kavua kemech tzel mechzedon.
Are we talking about now the general din or the kula? Still,
well, the general did. Just the general did. But we're going to see also it's a kula because they're going to be nine Yisraelim, and yet he's going to be potter as a rotzeach. But I looked through the entire Torah, and I didn't find any source for kavua. That's because I'm me. But the Gemara has a source in the Torah. Now, in order to appreciate this source, we're going to have to read the pasuk, and there are two ways of reading this pasuk. There's Rav Shimon's way of reading the pasuk and the Chachamim's way of reading the pasuk. Rav Shimon's way of reading the pasuk is not going to generate a din of kavua. So I'm on board with Rav Shimon. I didn't find the source for kavua. Neither did Rav Shimon. So at least I have one friend. But the Chachamim are going to read the same verse and come to the conclusion that Vashtetin pasuk is kavua. The Omar cried, now I'm going to read the whole pasuk to you. He gives you the whole pasuk here. You may have it on the side. If you have Shas Friedman, it has another name to it. I forgot what it's called. Ozvahad, right, the Ozvahad. So the pasuk says the following: V'chiya ish sone l're'ehu. So we're talking about a rotzeach, and we're talking about a rotzeach b'meziv. The arav lo, which means he sort of hunts him down, you know, he ambushes him. V'kam olav. Again, a lot of words here, and he stands up against him. The ko nefesh, and he hits him in a way that his nefesh mames is completely gone. Is then v'nas al achas ha'arim ha'el. Now we learn Masechta Makkos, so we know what this is about. Ultimately, we're going to bring him out of the Ir Mikla, we're going to put him to death. But initially, all the murderers run to the Ir Mikla, and then we're going to have to judge whether he's a shogeg or a mase. Fine. But the words v'kam olav are completely superfluous. You can remove them from the pasuk, and there's no loss to the meaning of the pasuk. So we're going to have now machlok shin Rav Shimon and the Chachamim. What does v'kam olav teach me? Okay, so we start with Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon says the following: let's say you wanted to kill a certain Jew. That was your intention. But accidentally you killed the wrong person, but he's also Jewish. So Rav Shimon says you're potter. You didn't have kavanas ritzicha le'ish zeh. And that's what he derives from the pasuk, the arev lo v'kam olav. V'kam olav means he wanted to kill this person. Achi is kavin lo. Prat was kavin le Reuven, he wanted to kill Reuven, and he killed Shimon. The Chachamim hold that as long as he wanted to kill a Jew, and at the end of the day he killed a Jew, even though he killed the wrong Jew, he's chayev misa. So therefore v'kam olav is now again superfluous, because it's not teaching Achi's Kavilo for Rabbanon. So what are Rabbanon going to do with this pasuk of Vakam Olav, which is superfluous? Amri Debei Rav Yanai, Prat Lezorek Evan Lego. Go means a group of people. So he threw a stone, and this group is comprised of both Jews and non-Jews. So he had kavana to kill one of them. And the Gemara says that according to the Chachamim, even though he killed the Jew, he's potter. Why? Because the pasuk says, v'kam olav.
He's potter mezid, but he's still chayav.
He's mezid, and he should be a rotzeach. And even if he killed a Jew other than the one he had intention to kill, but the Maisa he killed a Jew, and the Chacham are of the opinion that you don't need Achi is Kavilo, he's potter. So the Gemara says, hey Chidami, why is he potter? What's the case? Then it's hard to say that he had Kavana to kill a Jew. What do you mean he had a Kavana? Where's the stone going to hit, in all likelihood? It's going to hit one of the nine Knanim. Again, I don't know why the Gemara is chaffering with Knanim. I mean, it could have said Nachrim or Goyim. Maybe because with regard to Knanim, there's a mitzvah of Lo Sechai called Nefesh, one of the Shiva Amim. I don't know. is tape. We used to say Chinaman, but you know, then that became, you know, non. That's not no longer.
I've got a guess. It says going.
Oh, it has gone. Okay. He says, "V'tepekle derov knanim ninu." You know, ask yourself the question: is he about to kill a Jew or a non-Jew? You know, it's freeze frame the moment that the stone leaves his arm and is flying in midair. At that moment, if we froze it for a second and we asked ourselves the question, what's the kavana that he's putting into this ritzicha? He's putting a kavana to kill a guy, not to kill a Jew. Because 9 out of 10 tells me the rock is going to hit. Again, you have to assume that you can't aim, you know, towards the Jew. You know, either all the people look the same, or the distance, or, you know, whatever it is. You okay, Max? Don't kill yourself today.
What happens to that moving?
He's going to sue us, you know.
What if it's a moving target? And you threw it, there was a Jew there, or there was a Kanani there, and by the time the stone came down, they'd moved, and the Jew was in that place.
Again, your case is the same as my case, meaning the statistical probabilities, given all the variables, tell me that he's going to kill a guy. So the Gemara says in such a case, there's no hava mina that we can put this person to death, even though he killed a Jew. I don't need the pasuk to come olav.
Because it wasn't premeditated.
Well, again, you know, the premeditated here depends upon where the stone is going. If the stone is going to kill a Jew based on the halach of Rov, but again, now we have Rov Knanim, so we'll get to the case in the second of Rov Yisraelim, that's called premeditated. See, Brian, you can't tell me that because you didn't know that out of the 9 Jews in the mixture, which is the next case coming up, you thought it was going to kill the Knanim. That's a no-go. We're not going to accept that. If 9 out of 10 in the mixture are Jews, you are killing a Jew. I don't know which Jew. According to Rav Shimon, you're part of it because you don't know which Jew you're going to kill. Actually, it's Kavila. But the Chachamim say, as long as you're aiming for a Jew, you're Chayev. I don't care which Jew Chas Shom gets killed. So this is premeditated. But here's a case where we have 9 Knanim. If we have 9 Knanim, that's not premeditated. There's no Kavanas Ritzicha here because the stone is going to hit a guy. Now you may say, well, there's a 10% chance it'll hit a Jew, but the halacha says Rov, and Rov establishes certainty. As far as the Maisa, Zrikas Heaven, does it qualify, is it defined as Ritzicha? Not the answer is no, because it's going to hit the God. Okay. Is typically the Rov Knanim Ninu? I don't need the Pasuk of what? Vikam Olav. And even if I'll grant you Pagal, let's say 5 out of the 10 are Jews, 5 out of the 10 are Knanim, is Suffolk Nefashis Lahakel. Okay, we'll come back to that in just a minute. But you can't establish this as a Maiser Etzicha if it's a Suffolk Maiser Etzicha. Lotzricha de'ika tisha Yisraelim Knani Echad Beineim. So where is this stone going to? Rabosai, if they're 9 Jews, where's it going to?
Right.
To Israel, to the Rove. That's called Kavana Laro. That's called premeditated murder. The Havi Lay, but he's Potter. Why is he Potter? Ribbono Shalom, he's got 9 Jews. The stone is on its way to kill a Jew. And in fact, the stone did kill a Jew. Again, did he know which Jew is going to fall? That's irrelevant according to Chachamim. So why is he pot? The Kam Olav tells me that he's pot. It's a mute. This is not called Ritzicha because it's not the Kam Olav. The answer is Kosa Kavua. The Kol Kavua Kimechtz Al Mechtzah Dami. Now, I'm a little bit confused here about one word. I don't know why the Gemara had to add the Havile Knani Kavua.
What makes him Kavua?
Again, you've got a group of people. It's very similar to the case of the stores that are stationary, or the case of the Shrotzim that was stationary. Here, the people are stationary. I throw a stone into the people.
That's a cue. You're going into the people, Kilo?
Correct. I'm going into the people. And the people are Kavua. And therefore, it's called Kavua Kimechtzal Mechtzintami. Is Mamela have a Suffolk Nefashos? I cannot define that Zrika as a Maiser Ritzicha with a Kavana Larog as a Yehudi because according to Allah there are 5 Jews there. What do you mean 5 Jews? There's only 1 Jew. I'm sorry. There are 9 Jews. So why do you tell me how many Goyim are there? There's only 1 Goy. No, there are 5 Goyim there. That's the magic of Kol Kavua Kimechtzal Mechtzintami. So Rabosai, Daniel asked me before, what's the logic of Kol Kavua Kemetzal Mefzen Dami? And truth be told, I had a whole sophisticated answer for that question. But it's all worthless. What I was going to tell you is that when he goes into a butcher shop, it doesn't matter how many butcher shops are kosher. He's in his mind, there are two categories here. There's either kosher or non-kosher. Is he buying food for his dog at the cheaper price, or he's buying food for his family at the expensive price? There aren't nine kosher... Yeah, there are. It's nine kosher butcher shops. But in terms of the mindset, in other words, if he finds nymphs, he finds a piece of meat in the street, that's pure statistics. And statistically, we have a larger volume of kosher meat than trefa meat, or the other way around. But in the case of halach, Eitz Halach Hanuyos, where he goes into the stores, basically, he's using his brain. In his brain, there are only two categories. But Rabosai, that's Bava Maisa, that's Bafkis, what I just told you. It's very nice for a drush and shul, maybe. Not the chulin. But it's not correct, because the Gemara derives Kavua from the case of Zarek Evan Lego. Zarek Evan Lego is purely statistical. He's throwing a stone. Well, tell me, who's going to get killed by this stone? Well, it all depends what your statistics are. Name! There's a new halacha called Kavua Kemetzal Mefzen. That one guy all of a sudden becomes five guy. And you ask me, Daniel, is this Lakula Lakhura? The answer is it's Lakula. But be that as it may, if it works Lakula, it certainly is going to work Lakhura. We have now a biblical source for Kol Kavua Kemetzal Mefzen. The only problem is that source works very well according to Chachamim. It's not going to help me for Rav Shimon. And all of the Rishonim want to know, since Rav Shimon doesn't have a Kavala, how is he going to derive the halacha of Kol Kavua Kemetzal Mefzen? Itmar. Rav Chiyo Bar... Yeah. Go ahead. I desperately need a drink. Yeah. No, it's okay. I'll last another 7 minutes. Till they start banging.
Just water.
I usually drink tea, but I didn't bring my tea with me. I have this licorice
special tea.
I have this special tea seeds. It looks like marijuana. But it's boring as sin. Yeah, go ahead.
We're ready with tea. So I was ready with marijuana.
Yeah.
You're asking why it says the Havli Kanani Kavua. They're all Kavua. Basically.
They're all Kavua.
Yeah, but we want to equate the single, could be four and six. We want to bring the minority up to the Mechsa.
Up to the Mechsa.
Yeah, because you've got a majority of Jews, that includes Mechsa.
Right, but I just want to know something, Daniel. What would be, that's how my mind is curious. If, let's say, this Kanani is Kavua, and the nine Jews are running around, would the halacha change?
Well, like running,
I don't think it would change, but if somebody would argue that it does change, then the Gemara is very meduyak here. The Kanani is Kavua, and that makes the Kanani into Mechzal Mefzal.
I don't think the nine is ambiguous. We said nine with the
Chronos before.
When we're saying that he's potter, does that mean like nothing happens to him, or that just he's not a rotea?
Well, I'll tell you the truth.
It's a little wild.
There are two authorities vested in Beis Din. One is the authority to apply the law, and then there's another authority to protect society. Like, for example, the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, there's something called Eidus Miuchedes, where he's off on a technicality. The two witnesses who saw the crime did not see each other. So what? They both saw the crime, but the Torah says that that's not Eidus. So the Mishnah says, Machnisa no sola kippa. We're not going to let this guy roam the streets. So there are meta halachic punishments, and Beis Din is invested with authority. I mean, Gemara has a strange case in Masechta Nida of a man who was courting a girl publicly, I mean, doing stuff that, and the Gemara says they put him to death because the dar needed it, the generation needed it. They were pirates, bedavar. The Gemara talks about riding a horse on Shabbos, that they beat this guy up, blew in the face till he died, or something like that. You know, so that's already a different kind of thing. For example, you talk about the halakhic view on incarceration. You know, you look in the Torah, there's nothing about prison, imprisonment in the Torah. But yet, in the modern state of Israel, the poskim say that there is room for instituting imprisonment, but it comes under this meta-halachic system where the Torah vests in the Rabbanon all the powers they need in order to protect society. When there'll be a melech be Yisrael and Mitzvah Hashem, those powers will accrue to the melech. Sanhedrin then plays a secondary role of like checks and balances. Okay, we only have 5 minutes, so let's see what we can do in 5 minutes. Itmar. Rav Chiya bar Ashi omar Rav. So now we're going to have two traditions in the name of Rav. The first tradition is Rav Chiya, the second is Rav Chanan. Halachik Rav Yossi, which means that all we need is one Rav Kshem. Okay? Rav Chanan says in the name of Rav, Hora Shah Haisa, that Rav Yossi himself would rely on one Rav, but only Horas Shah. Okay? Now let's just see if Rav Yossi's name appears. Just a second. I lost my place here. Yeah. Om Rav Yossi. Okay, now, truth be told, Rav Yossi really didn't say a word over here. It's really Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. Okay, I guess it was Rav Yossi who brought the tradition in the name of Rav Yossi.
We're not talking about our mission, about Maaseh B'Tanakhus.
That's what I thought. Is another pshat here? Did I miss something?
Well, that says Om Rav Yossi, no?
Right. But Rav Yossi didn't say a word in our mission. He just mentioned the case. He didn't paskin any Ora. But I guess he brought the tradition in the name of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, so we're calling it Rav Yossi. That's the best I can do right now. But I wouldn't get caught up on that. That's a technicality. But clearly, in our Mishnah, Rav Yossi is relying on one single Rav. And that seems to be the Psak of Rav according to Rav Chiya's tradition. But Rav Chanan has a tradition that we only rely on Rav Yossi because of Ora Shah. Whatever it was necessary to allow this woman to get married. I don't know the details, but Lidoros, in all cases, we need two robes. So that's Machlokas, what Rav said. Masiv Rav Yirmiyah, Uli Yuchsin lo be'inon trei rubi. The Gemara is now attacking Rav Chanan. No, I'm sorry. The Gemara is now attacking Rav Chiya, because Rav Chiya says in the name of Rav that as a universal rule, one robe is sufficient. But tonight we have a Mishnah. Okay, and the Mishnah says Shamati. No, I lost the place. Sorry. The Mishnah says Matzah Batinok. You find a baby. This is a bamboo cradle. Remember that Mushlach im rov ovi kochavim. If most of the people in the city are goyim, then ovi kochavim. We assume this baby is not Jewish. That means the baby gets no privileges as a Jew. The law is that a Jew is allowed to demand a parnasa, that's called lahachios, if let's say the Jew has no food to eat. So in this case, this baby is going to be defined forever and forever as a goy. In Rov Yisrael, the city is made up of Jewish people, predominantly Jewish, Yisrael. Mechza al mechza, if it's equal, Yisrael. Now, what does that mean, Yisrael? So, Omar Rav, Lo Shana Lach Yoso. We can obligate Bezdin to supply him with food and stave off a starvation based on Mechz al Mechz. Abol Yuchsin Lo. When it comes to Yuchsin, to allow this child to marry into the Jewish fold, then Mechzal Mechza is not sufficient. Shmuel has a different pshat. Lefakeach Olav Es Hagal. Okay, this is complicated. What's Lefakeach Olav Es Hagal? So before I saw Rashi, I thought Lefakeach Olav Es Hagal means Pikuach Nefesh. And we're going to be Docha Shabbos for the sake of a Suffolk. Correct? We have Mechzal Mechza. We don't know if he's Jewish or not. Let's violate the Shabbos for the sake of a suffix. correct? However, Rashi says that this whole discussion between Rav and Shmuel is not referring to Metzal Mechza, but to Rov Ha'ir Yisrael. So if the Rov of the city are Yisrael, Rav says we have to support the baby. That's called Lach Yoso. But we're not going to allow the baby to get married because we need trei robes. That's for Yuchsin. And Shmuel is going to say that we need rov in order to be matir Shabbos lefakecha l'sagal. And that's a problem because l'chora we should violate Shabbos even in the case of Safi, even if that's al mefza. Okay? In any event, one thing is clear from this Mishnah and the way Rav interprets the Mishnah that for Yuchsin we need not one rov but two rovs. And that's going to be a kasha on whom? On the original version of Rav, which was quoted by Rabbi Chiya. So the Gemara says, Ishtamita say, no, it's Rabbi Yirmiyahu who asked this kasha. Okay, I guess we'll have to stop here. So Mirz Hashem, we'll finish the perek, bring your schnapps next week, and we'll make a little scene.